This morning, I'm going to be exploring with you a way in which some of us may want to deal with the sadness that has been brought on by the election a week or so ago. I call it a house divided, whither thou goest. If you are like me, we're deeply disappointed in the direction this country has been going since Election Day. You have, like me, probably been feeling emotionally drained during the past week or so. But in some ways, these past days have felt like deja vu. Processing Donald Trump's election shouldn't seem unfamiliar to those of us who have an understanding of our nation's history. If you go back to 1858, 2 years before he was elected president, Abraham Lincoln said this in a speech he gave down in Springfield, Illinois. This is where he introduced the provocative image of a house divided. He quoted the words of Jesus in the Gospel of Mark. He declared, "A house divided against itself cannot stand. I believe this government can endure permanently, half slave and half cannot endure permanently, half slave and half free. I do not expect the union to be dissolved. I do not expect the house to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be united. It will become all one thing or all another." Now, Lincoln governed during the most divided era in our history. Over 600,000 died in the Civil War. Many more were wounded. But let's move forward. The historian John Meacham wrote this during the first term of Donald Trump, and I think it can be an extended description of where we are today. Extremism, racism, nativism, isolationism, driven by fear of the unknown, tend to spike in periods of common or economic and social stress, like what we've been experiencing in America today. We have little trust in government, Meacham says. Household income lag behind our usual middle class expectations. The fires of fear have long found oxygen when a broad and seemingly threatened change is afoot. Now, in the second decade of the new century in the presidency of Donald Trump, the alienated are being mobilized afresh by changing demographics, by broadening conceptions of identity, and by an economy that prizes information age brains over manufacturing brawn. And he quotes David Duke, the former Grand Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan. "We are determined to take our country back. We are going to fulfill the promises of Donald Trump. That's what we believed in. That's why we voted for Donald Trump, because he said he's going to take our country back, and that's what we gotta do." By David Duke. I took that quote from Meacham's book, The Soul of America, The Battle for Our Better Angels. Now, I think it's fair to say that Donald Trump will be governing in perhaps the most bitter and acrimonious period since that time. But in some ways, it's beginning to feel very different the second time. By this, I mean, we know that a Trump presidency is going to look what it's going to look like. We can expect an extensive erosion of human rights, continuing assaults on bodily autonomy, and our understanding of democracy. We're feeling a lot of emotions all at one time, though it may be hard to exactly pinpoint what exactly is causing us the most distress. What I want to explore with you this morning in part is based on discussions that some of us have had this past 4 weeks during a workshop that we had right here at Prairie on grief and grieving. We learned that, one, grief is a natural part of life, and while painful, is an important way to process feelings and emotions as a result of a loss. Contrary to popular belief, grief does not follow a set pattern, and different individuals and cultures have different ways of experiencing and expressing and feeling grief. Everyone grieves differently. There's no wrong or right way. Grief can come from many things, including the loss of a pet, the loss of a job, or another major life change. Grief can come in many phases. It does not follow a set pattern. Grief is simply the outcome of a loss. But there's a caveat. The criterion from what you lost is that you were attached to it or somehow held it close. When we experience traumatic events in our life, and that election was something that we experienced, some may have felt the hurt and memories of what might happen all over again. And now some may be having new emerging concerns that it's only going to get worse. In fact, now, this is something that I learned in preparing for these remarks. There's a term that some psychologists give to this feeling, and it's called political grief. Yeah, it's a real thing. Dr. Melissa Flint, professor of clinical psychology at Midwestern University Glendale, noted that it occurs on both individual and collective basis. She says, when one struggles with a particular ideology held close by those in political power, there is grief. This type of grief also reflects the feeling that your worldview or political beliefs, what you think is right or wrong or morally valid, is under attack. In addition to the election loss, you may be mourning potential losses of your own rights and economic stability, as well as worried about the impact it may have on reproductive rights and public health. Political grief may also involve the fracturing of relationships as a result of ideological disagreements, grappling with your identity if your values are at odds with other members in your family or in your community. You also may be mourning your future safety. Professor Darcy Harris, a professor at King's University College in Ontario, who specializes in non-death grief and loss, says this: at the heart of political grief is a sense of despair due to the loss of predictability and safety in governmental structures. According to Professor Harris, there's also a sense of paralysis that occurs when you question whether those in power are capable of making decisions for the good of the country during a time of such political polarization. For those experiencing political grief, loss of an election is equated with the loss of identity, loss of agency, loss of a voice. Its impact can be powerful, personal, and hurtful. What about the feelings of disappointment associated with the fact that but more than half of the voting public chose a candidate who is a convicted felon, was accused of inciting insurrection, and routinely makes inflammatory and inaccurate remarks about women, marginalized populations? Another psychiatrist says, and her name is Dion Metzger, we must acknowledge this as grief. Dr. Metzger practices in Atlanta, Georgia. And she sees a number of people who are dealing with political grief. She says in her peace. It's not only the loss of the candidate you voted for, but also the dread of what is to come. Grief and fear are two very strong emotions we have at the same time. There's also another part of this sadness. A lot of people are confused by the heaviness that they're feeling. Metzger says, I remind them that these feelings of hopelessness, low energy, and sleep disruptions can all fall under the umbrella of sadness. So, if you're trying to process the election results and the range of emotions that accompany it, but aren't sure where to start, here are some tips, some suggestions and strategies from the mental health professionals on how to help you move forward, whither thou goest. It's okay to feel, quote, shitty. Yes, it's okay. Don't put a time limit on allowing yourself to sit with your emotion. Metzger says, if you still feel this way a week or even a month from now, it's okay. There is no timeline on grief. Crying can sometimes contribute and continue to help relieve the pain of loss. It's part of the parasympathetic system. Everyone talks about fight or flight. That's the sympathetic nervous system. The other system is rest and digest, and that's the parasympathetic nervous system, which signals your body that it's time to slow your heart rate, reduce blood pressure, and also help to promote a state of calm. Trying progressive muscle relaxation. Doing yoga. Using mindfulness exercises and other forms of self-compassion. Professor Martin says, a lot of times we don't realize how much tension we're holding in our bodies. And she recommends an exercise called progressive muscle relaxation. And this is when you tense and release the tension in different parts of your body to signal your body that it's time to relax. It's something you can do anywhere on your own in less than 5 minutes. Professor Martin also suggests engage your community. It's time for you to move beyond November 5th. But as we gear up for what is almost certainly going to be uncertainties, it's important to recognize that we still have our own agency, still have something that we can do on our own. And that is to engage with our community. Community is really an essential part of these moments. It helps us move from powerlessness and hopelessness to finding ways to take power back into our own lives. You could, and I suggest this, help by volunteering, like some of us do every month, by working at the River Food Bank. That's supporting those people who are in need of special food items. And then here's one that I know would be very helpful for us. Unplug as much as possible. When I turn on the news, and I'm afraid to, not afraid to admit, but I have cable news, and I watch MSNBC, and I know that I shouldn't, because I am just not going to be able to take in all of those news items that we're hearing about. Dr. Metzger says, I'm advising my patients to take a break from social media, television news, and group chats while they process. These platforms can only intensify those scary emotions following an election. And instead, she recommends focusing on comfort and self-care for the next few weeks. That could mean watching your favorite shows, spending time with friends, not talking about politics, or simply getting outside and take a walk. There's something important for people of color and other members of marginalized populations. Martin says, the number of racist and discriminatory incidents increased under Trump's first term of office, and it's only going to happen again. It's only going to be worse, and a lot of black people and people of historically excluded groups are walking around with PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. We might also want to remember that boundaries need to be observed. Professor Metzger says, we are already emotionally exhausted, so our capabilities for others are lessened when we don't recognize and observe boundaries. And then here's one I suggest for us to consider. Turn fear and anger into action. Those experiencing fear and anger should try channeling those emotions into something productive, like caring for yourself and others. Professor Martin says, I tell my patients to use everything. We do breathing techniques, and we talk about the impact of what's going on in the world. And then I also say, so what do you want to do next? Because part of mental health is also knowing that you have autonomy and figuring out how you're going to care for yourself in that realm. Now, there are other suggestions in our grief and support, our grief and grieving workshop. We observed what we called, or what I handed out and suggested, it's called the Mourner's Bill of Rights. Yes, you have the right to experience your own unique grief. You have the right to talk about your grief. You have the right to feel a multitude of emotions. Yeah. And you have the right to be tolerant of your physical and emotional limits. You have the right to experience what is called grief bursts. We're doing something, putting the dishes in the dishwasher at night after supper, and all of a sudden something comes up and it kind of grabs us. That's a grief burst. It's like a downburst of rain or a sunburst. It comes without any warning. You have a right to that. You have a right to use a ritual, singing to yourself, having a place in your home where you can light a candle and just meditate. You have the right to embrace your own spirituality. You have the right to search for meaning. You have the right to treasure your memories. You have the right to move toward your grief and healing. Not away. Don't discard it. Go through it. These are some of those suggestions. Now, I'd like to leave you with this final thought. Democracy has been called the worst form of government, except for all the other forms of government. It is messy, and it's certainly not the most efficient, predictable system. Yet, democracy has the potential to be the most just and equitable way to organize a nation. Like peace, democracy is fragile. So is the public trust that holds it together. And when we judge people with whom we disagree, our fellow Americans, as evil or uncaring, we have the making of a house divided that cannot stand. It's not right versus left. It's right versus wrong. We as Unitarian Universalists are gentle, loving people, but we are also ready to be an angry people. And singing for our lives is also another way to deal with mourning our losses. And when we sing hymn number 170, which we will after I conclude, we're going to help our healing by using our voices and help the healing process. So may it be. Our closing words, The Pathway to Healing by Phoenix Bell Shelton Biggs. Friends, thank you for your witness to all that exists on the margins. Thank you for your commitment to hold yourselves and one another in great and steadfast love. Moving forward from this space, may we continue to nurture spiritual growth. May we continue to travel along the winding pathway to healing. And from whatever brokenness we individually and collectively hold, knowing that we do not journey this path alone.